6 minutes after the hour of 12 noon, Monday, August 1st, 2022. We are on the air live in Central Time on the Power Hour. Dave Krieger with you. Thank you so much for joining us this hour. Wanted to let you know about our quick sale at the Power Mall. We got 10% off all of the OptiVita products and the iComplex CS. And as far as OptiVita, we've got a special offer of 15% off basic essentials when you buy that product on the Power Mall. That's what keeps us going. All of these things are determined by the time you get to checkout. Discounts already applied. So, and we appreciate you shopping the Power Mall. That's, like I said, what keeps us going. We, on occasion, have some, controversial authors. We had David Parker on last week, conservative living in San Francisco. Apparently his publisher thought it was one of the, or his press people thought it was one of the best interviews he's ever done. They were thrilled. And, hopefully, when we have folks on, if you have questions or comments, this is why we have a toll-free number, 844-769-2944, which you should have in your speed dial. And if there's any discourse that you want to shed a light on in our conversation regarding COVID, that's what we're going to talk about this hour, because everything about COVID, according to a new book out called The Coronation, Essays from the COVID Moment by Charles Eisenstein, pretty much portrays a lot of what has happened as far as social crises that COVID-19 has revealed. Old reality disintegrated. They've come up with something now called a new normal. Our humanity is in crisis. Our sense-making is in crisis. Everything having to do with social, political, spiritual journeys are in crisis. And the essay, there's several of them in the book. And we have Charles Eisenstein with us on the Skype to explain this to us, how these series of unforgettable essays all of a sudden managed to come into a book about what our new normal can be. We're all still scratching our heads, Charles. Perhaps you could shed some light on this.
Well, hey, Dave, happy to be on your show here. It's funny, you said you sometimes have controversial authors on. And I'm like, hold on a second, am I controversial? Oh, yeah, I guess I am. Because before COVID, I never really was. And I'd been for years, for probably 15 years at least, been writing publicly on a lot of the same things that I was saying during COVID, and I never got in trouble from the liberal establishment for saying any of it. I mean, it was not considered heretical to be a critic of big pharma or government regulatory agencies or the military industrial complex. In fact, that was supposed to be left, actually. And then during COVID, all of a sudden, I'm saying a lot of the same things. Specifically about the pharmaceutical industry, vaccines, and the scientific and media establishment around it, but also on a more philosophical level about deep paradigms of control. And all of a sudden, people are calling me a right winger and telling me I have blood on my hands and I'm a conspiracy theorist and so on and so forth, which was quite shocking because I hadn't really changed. So it's really interesting now, the realignment that's going on, where the old labels of liberal and conservative, right and left, are just they've just been put in a blender, and we're realigning in different ways. So I guess one reason I didn't just answer your question very well, but one reason that I'm putting these essays out into book form and tying them together with other material is that we haven't really made sense of what just happened yet. And my contribution is a way to make sense of it. What just happened to us, this radical overturning of the normality of human affairs of the last century, all of a sudden in the span of 2 years was completely interrupted. And now we're kind of going back to normal, but in a very uneasy way, because if what's to stop something similar from happening again? And have we really gone back to normal? So I guess what I'll say is that the book, The Coronation, is an offering of sense-making. Because, I don't know, I'm not sure how long I should keep talking here, but...
Well, no, I mean, it's one of those things, Charles, that, you know, when we talk about stuff like this, everybody and his brother has been exposed to this. Social media played a huge part in the dynamics of social division. You talk about that in the book. It's even in the foreword. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think it's even on the back cover, the inside back cover, you know, the little folded flap that, you know, you get in these books. And the thing that I look at, there has been so much family division. This was not by inadvertent happenstance. This was planned. They already knew. The government already knew. And the thing is, you know, when people come at me like they came at you and they sit there and call you a conspiracy theorist and, you know, death denier and all this other stuff and start, you know, labeling you with left-wing terms that right-wingers get normally painted with, I always respond with, is that the best you got? Because you don't have the data. And the thing is they're always so quick, just like in Roe v. Wade, they're always so quick to go burn a pregnancy center to the ground or deface it because of the fact they think that Roe v. Wade meant that there is no more abortion. And it's like, no, it was a victory for the 10th Amendment that the states actually have more power than the federal government. The federal government can't regulate it. It's something that's been on the books for the last 50 years. It was a part of everybody's normal. You see, and that's what I think you're getting at with this book, is trying to let people in on the fact of what new normal is versus what normal was, what we could be facing again, because now they're declaring monkeypox is going to be another pandemic. And it's like, okay, you fooled us once. That ain't happening.
Yeah.
I mean, is that how you're feeling about this whole thing now?
I mean, the monkeypox thing, I'm like, kind of like you were saying, I'm like, can't you do better than that? You know, like, it reminds me a little bit of at post 9/11, they came up with anthrax, the anthrax scare, and a series of other attempts to frighten us. And it didn't really take hold, you know? Same with monkeypox. Like, I mean, come on, are people actually scared of monkeypox? Not that it's not a terrifying disease. I mean, I just inadvertently walked in some poison ivy last week, and now I've got monkeypox all over my feet. You know?
No.
So, I mean, it must be that, right?
Really? So, just, you know, what are the stuff they normally put on that? yeah, well, it's but, not you know, the Jynneos vaccine, that's for sure.
But there's some deep issues here, because, like you mentioned just now, the data. And, you know, when you look at the data, the problem, though, as you probably have noticed, if you try to bring data to convince somebody on the other side, they're not going to accept your data. And if they bring you data, the first thing you're going to do is look at the source of the data. How was that data obtained? What were the vested interests in among the people who commissioned the study? Because right now, data is used as a political weapon. So the data that we have, and this is a very different environment than 50 years ago when everybody left, right, and center kind of agreed on what a valid source of fact was from which to argue. But we don't have that today. Like anything that comes out of the CDC or the medical establishment is immediately suspect. And we certainly have a lot of examples of the manipulation of that data, even completely faked studies that are readily accepted as long as they conform to the dominant narrative. But any study that contradicts the dominant narrative gets exposed to intense scrutiny and is memory-holed from the corporate media, and it never enters the common font of knowledge. So we're facing a bigger problem right here than merely the other side not being not accepting data and logic and facts. Like data, logic, and facts have themselves become weapons. And this is why it's so hard to make sense of it. You know, you can go down any of these rabbit holes. Like one of the ones you mentioned is, okay, this was all planned out. This was all a, you know, a plandemic. But that, and I think that you can understand some things about the last 2 or 3 years through that lens. But what about the phenomenon of hysteria? That's what I called it as at the very beginning of the pandemic. I'm like, this is a hysteria. It's not nothing. It's not that there's no disease happening whatsoever, but it's a hysteria. It's taking on a life of its own far beyond the actual medical danger, which was historically speaking, not that much, you know, compared to historical plagues. And in a hysteria, once it gets going, then opportunistic political and financial powers will take advantage of it. But it doesn't mean that they created the hysteria, which is kind of inconvenient for those of us who want to make sure it never happens again. Because if it were the evil plan of a bunch of evil people, then we could stop it from happening again by exposing and taking down the evil people. But if it's an emergent phenomenon in society, then we can't solve the problem by simply identifying an enemy and destroying them. And we're in this place of bewilderment. Like, what do we do about it? I don't know. And that's a really good place to be, actually, because that allows a deeper level of understanding where we can say, okay, what makes society so susceptible to hysteria? What makes us so susceptible to propaganda? What makes us so susceptible to manipulation? What makes us so compliant? What gives the elites the power that they have or seem to have? It's only our acquiescence. It's only our naivete. It's only our lack of critical thinking. It's only our gullibility. And so where does that come from? And how can we reclaim sovereignty, which is really what the title of the book suggests, a coronation, which is an initiation into sovereignty. How do we reclaim that so that we will be forever immune to hysteria, to mass formation, to the mentality of the mob, to manipulation, to dehumanizing a segment of society like the unvaxxed and making them scapegoats and associating them with filth and degeneracy and contagion? Like these patterns have been going on for centuries. And so that's really where I'm coming from in this book.
All right. So most of the stories that are in this, these essays, relate to every aspect of what you just talked about. That would be a fair statement.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It gets, you know, it goes to philosophical domains as well as, you know, really practical scientific issues.
Well, this entire division, of course, you know, I go back to this again, because until people actually realize that the politics of life and the fact that the politicized discourse you speak of in the book and in the footnotes, these we cannot come to an agreement. It's going to be us against them. Medical history right now has been rewritten. They've used it as a weapon. They've lied to us. It's perfectly obvious. The ones that are actually paying attention, which basically comprise pretty much all of our listening audience here, because we have some very smart listeners, I would say the majority of which have not succumbed to taking the jab or even getting swabbed. They wanted no part of it because they suspected, when all of a sudden they just pulled a vaccine out of their butt and says, we've got a miracle cure. No, it doesn't work like that. They know, based on past history, it takes 10 years to develop a vaccine, and all of a sudden now they've got something right away that they can give people, and they call it a vaccine, when if people actually do their homework, they're going to find out that these are patented items. And the next thing we're trying to determine is whether or not this patented item. And I've had listeners bring it up on the show, Charles, Mm-hmm. When you've got these listeners calling and saying, hey, I've got a thing about the fact I've been online, I've read the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office stuff on Moderna, on Pfizer, and everything else. These things are all patented, and they're injecting them into people, and they're telling them they're safe and effective. And if you look at what happened with Monsanto and all their seed blowing into a farmer's yard, and they say, hey, our seed's growing in your yard, and they steal his property legally in court, what's to stop these people who lied to you about the fact that their vaccine or emergency use authorization gene therapy drug is patented and you have it in your body? Now all of a sudden we own your body. How's that going to play out with people when they find out that some, you know, modern medical company out there that basically conjured up this stuff that, you know, we don't actually know everything that's in it. We yeah. only suspect we know what's in it. And all of a sudden they come claiming us to be their property now because of the fact that we've been injected with this stuff. I mean, how's that going to play out?
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of horrific dystopian scenarios that we could trace from our current position. You know, genetically engineered humans. I mean, you're familiar with all the different conspiracy timelines as well. But I want to say, like, it's not like, you know, all of a sudden they went bad with the mRNA injectable products. You said, like, you know, a vaccine takes 10 years to develop. Well, even the ones that took 10 years to develop, even they aren't really safe. And the reason that that's not commonly known is for the same reason that they've been able to railroad the mRNA vaccines through. It's that the science has been corrupted by financial and political interests. But, you know, I've been a vaccine skeptic since the 1990s. And, you know, the damage caused by the traditional vaccines isn't as obvious, and maybe it's not as, you know, not quite as pervasive, but, you know, a lot of it, I mean, and I can't see here again, I can't offer proof that the vaccination program is responsible for the rise in autoimmunity, the rise in allergies, and other chronic conditions, which were almost non-existent when I was a kid. There was like one kid in the entire school who was allergic to anything when I was a kid. And now it's like half the class is allergic to nuts or to wheat, you know, or to strawberries or to something. So like I can't, and the reason that I can't scientifically prove that there's a causal link here is because there's no incentive for that science to even be done. The process by which data is obtained is itself corrupt. And so this is another level of the lying that you're talking about. Deliberate, explicit lies are just the tip of the iceberg. Underneath that, there's all kinds of half lies and strategic silence. Like, suppose you're a doctor, okay? And you're seeing a lot of vaccine damage. Well, are you going to speak up and risk getting your license revoked, risk the ridicule of your colleagues, risk getting fired? Are you going to speak up? Only if you're very brave are you going to speak up. And thank God for the brave people out there. But most people are going to be like, oh, okay, I'm not going to mention this. I'm going to keep it quiet. Maybe I'll tell my wife, you know, but I'm not going to be public about this. And I'm certainly not going to tell my patients that the vaccines are risky, otherwise one of them will report me. Okay, so that doctor, is he lying? Well, he's not uttering falsehoods directly, maybe, but he's not telling the truth either. Or what if you're a scientist and you have a choice to either to run a study that could expose the inefficacy of vaccines, of a certain vaccine, or the danger of a certain vaccine, or maybe you'll apply for a grant for another study that is about something innocuous, about, you know, ion transport over the cell membrane or something like that. Which one are you going to choose? The one that's going to destroy your career, or the one that's going to get you the grant and get you, you know, an appointment at the university? So this is like a kind of a systemic lying. Where if you're in the media, like, which story are you going to report? Are you going to report on the unvaccinated person who regrets it on his deathbed that he should have gotten jabbed? Or are you going to report on all the people who are having horrific adverse events? One of those reports is going to get you recognition as a serious journalist. It's going to get you published. The other one is going to get you ejected from the club.
You end up like Glenn Greenwald.
Yeah,
half the stuff you get censored. Now, see, you graduated from Yale University with a degree in mathematics and philosophy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, here are two diverse things. One relies on figures and formulas, and the other one relies on the human condition. So, you know, and then you spent a decade in Taiwan working as a Chinese English translator.
Yeah.
So, you know, very diverse here, but understanding as a countercultural philosopher and author of several books, including Sacred Economics and The More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible. You've got this new book out, The Coronation. The stories that are in here, they're supposed to be profound in such a way. I mean, it's the reality of what happened to the people that are in these essays that is supposed to shake us back into normal, shake us back into, well, that's the way of the world, go along to get along. I mean, how does this work?
Well, I mean, it's hard to sum it up into one short paragraph. One of the main themes, though, is about conformity and the dynamics of the mob.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll talk more about the conformity and dynamics of the mob after we take this short break at the bottom of the hour here in the Power Hour. Dave Krieger with you. We're with Charles Eisenstein, author of The Coronation. We'll entertain some phone calls, 844-769-2944, after the short break. Stay with us.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Listen, one of the things that was not mentioned was the Oregadent. That's for when you brush your teeth. You just take it and put your toothpaste on your toothbrush and just take a couple drops of Oregadent and put that on your toothbrush and brush your teeth. And I'm telling you, that stuff, once I brush my teeth, I don't want to eat anything for a while. Anyway, it's wonderful. So I use it a couple times a day, and your teeth really do feel so fresh. It's going to help a lot the next time I go to the dentist. So I really appreciate you giving me the heads up about that one.
Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829. Right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Just recently, we both started on the lithium balance. I want to keep my memory. My two in-laws are dealing with, the Alzheimer's. They're in their 90s, and I see it. I don't want to be like that, and I've heard you talk about lithium to, you know, improve our memory and keep us up there.
Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? ThePowerMall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at ThePowerMall.com today.
Minutes after the hour of 12 noon Central Time, Monday, August 1st, 2022. Dave Krieger with you on the Power Hour. Thanks so much for joining us in this segment. We have been talking to Charles Eisenstein, who has a book out, Essays from the COVID Movement, or Moment, and it's entitled The Coronation, a series of stories from Chelsea Green Publishing, Tragedy and Controversy, Hope and Despair, Courage and Defiance, Separation and Reunion. How can we find meaning and cohesion as we emerge from the shattering pandemic moment? And how can we even find meaning, cohesion, and anything decent in life when they keep repeating or trying to repeat history? There is a new article that's just out in the Epoch Times. Pfizer board member Dr. Scott Gottlieb warned the U.S. lacks a federal infrastructure capable of dealing with public health emergencies such as monkeypox. And basically, they're saying now in a New York Times opinion that it's about to become the next public health failure. And you got to wonder about something like this. This is a Pfizer board member. And when you look at the fact that Pfizer has been making all of this money from all of these booster shots and COVID shots, we call them the clot shot here on the Power Hour, in addition to the jab, the shot, various other things, Charles.
The quaxine, don't forget that.
The quaxine, yeah, we can't forget that one. When you're looking at stuff like this and, you know, being educated as you are and seeing all of this and documenting these things and the stories you write about, when you hear Big Pharma coming out and starting to blast stuff like this, I mean, monkeypox is not in their that's not in their neighborhood. It's not in their backyard. They're making stuff having to do with COVID. Monkeypox is something that some foreign entity, Jynneos, is made a vaccine for, and we can't guarantee that this isn't more of the same. Everybody else, if it's not an mRNA vaccine, they're going to dismiss it. I mean, is this another episode of political tit for tat?
I'm not as interested on it on that level, but I want to return. I will mention maybe a bit more about monkeypox in the context of, like, this is nothing new. If you remember about 5 years ago, do you remember the Zika scare, the Zika virus?
Oh, yeah.
And before that, it was H1N1. Like, they keep bringing out these scary new diseases that actually – okay, so you just mentioned before the break my educational background. The most useful thing about my educational background, which was, as you mentioned, in mathematics and philosophy, was that it showed me the limitations of my educational background. It showed me the limitations of that entire approach to understanding the world. Mathematics is it's called the language of science. And we have long associated progress with bringing science to more and more realms of society and human choice making. So if a policy is scientific, it is done by the numbers, not by some emotion, but by cold, hard data. So what ends up happening when you make choices either in personal life or collectively by the numbers is that you ignore all of the things that are not easily quantified, that don't fit into your metrics and don't fit into your numbers. So we saw this during COVID. What is easy to measure, what is easy to put a number on, is the number of deaths, the number of cases, the number of illnesses, the number of hospitalizations. So we built a policy around that. What's hard to put a number on is the value of civil liberties, the value of meeting in person for worship, the value of singing together in a choir, the value of children playing on a playground, the value of being able to go outdoors and go wherever you want, the value of getting together for Christmas, the value of seeing the naked full faces of another human being, the value of touch, the value of hugs. None of these things were part of epidemiological decision making. And as long as we as a society accept that, as long as we accept that the only important things are the things that we can put a number on, then we are going to be forever vulnerable to these quantified threats. I mean, it could say the same thing. I could say similar things about climate change. When you define ecological health as a matter of a single number, carbon dioxide, a single metric, then you obliterate all the other dimensions of ecological health that are a lot harder to put a number on, like biodiversity, like the value of the forest where you grew up as a kid. And maybe that gets leveled to build, you know, a parking lot, as the saying goes. And they're like, oh, that's okay. We've offset that by planting a forest somewhere else. Well, what about the value of that forest? What about the value of a multi-generational farm and healthy soil? What about the value of whales and elephants and dolphins and songbirds? What about the value of fireflies at night? Like, none of these things add up to much in terms of carbon numbers. So a scientifically data-driven establishment ignores those things. And I could give examples from other fields too. So this is the kind of thing I write about, Dave. Like the deeper terrain that makes us vulnerable to this kind of hysteria. Another aspect of it is a climate of fear, a climate of anxiety. A climate of this bewilderment at and dismay at the decline of civilization. So we have had actually a genuine health crisis intensifying over the last two generations or more. It's I mentioned it already. It's the rise of chronic illness. But chronic illness like obesity, depression, addiction, anxiety, autoimmunity. These are not something where you can find an enemy, a virus or a bacteria or something to control and dominate and kill, something to go to war against. These are something that comes from the inside. There's no enemy to fight. There's nobody to kill. There's nobody to control. So we don't know what to do. So when COVID comes along, now there's almost like the establishment and even the public almost breathe a sigh of relief, because finally we have a target. And the implicit promise is that if only we can control COVID, then we will all be safe and we will all be healthy.
Yeah, that's wishful thinking in my book, Charles. You know, here. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, look how much we were willing to give up. And you just talked about all the stuff on value systems. Look what we were willing to give up as far as our values just to go along to get along. I mean, it just never ceases to amaze me. And the calls are starting to come in. Dave in New York, welcome to the show. You're on the phone with Charles Eisenstein. What say you?
Hey, good afternoon, Dave and Doug, or Charles.
Charles,
serendipity, or whatever, however you want to put it, and you can look this up very easily because it's from the Power Hour. But it was July 18th in 2016. Joyce Riley had Dr. Doug Rockian, R-O-K-K-E, and almost to the letter, exactly what you guys are talking about was on back then, only it was the SARS virus. And prior to that, my father had the swine flu virus, and I told him, don't take the shot, but it was too late. By the time I got to his house, he hadn't realized he'd gotten it. He blew up like a balloon, and it almost killed him. But very simply, the hour three of 7/18/2016 on the Power Hour will show the meaningfulness of all of what you're discussing right now. And that's easy for you guys to hook him up with, you know, and just listen to it. I don't make vain judgments or, you know, quackery or embellish anything. So it's all right there in that respect. History repeating itself, the importance of Joyce, you know.
Yeah. You're another story, Dave, you're another story. You're exactly what Charles is writing about, stuff like this in the book. Everything you just went through with SARS and your dad, I mean, you're another living story. Would that be a fair statement, Charles?
Yeah, I mean, the point that Dave here is making is that this is nothing new. It's the same playbook, and it's the same vulnerability of the public to this kind of fear-based manipulation. And if we don't go to that level and ask, why are we so vulnerable to the fear-mongering? Why are we so trusting of the authorities that have repeatedly betrayed us? Like, what kind of victim-abuser dynamics are going on here? Like, this, we have to ask those questions. We have to go to that level. Otherwise, you know, we can remove the current criminals from power. But if we don't change on that level, we're just going to get a new set of criminals to exploit us.
I get that, Charles. Dave, because of this and what happened in your story, in your world, were you a skeptic before this happened to you, or just over time did you turn into a skeptic and then, like the rest of us, are questioning everything that's going on in society right now, especially with our government and what their mandates and dictates are?
I was on my county's board of the Christian Coalition, and back in 1994, I've been a pain in Satan's backside ever since. And I don't want to get onto the me part of it, because I was a watchman on the wall. I was told there couldn't be a watchman on the wall because it was an Old Testament thing, and you couldn't be that. I said, then I'm a biblical whistleblower. And that's what I've been ever since. And I don't, you know, I know the dark side has come against me numerous times, but so what? You're going to serve somebody. You're going to either serve the dark side or the light side. I'm not going to eat cricket meat, if you will. And you know, I'll leave it at that, and I'll catch you guys later.
I wouldn't either, Dave. Yeah, you wouldn't eat crickets, would you, Charles?
I mean, actually, like, I have experimented a little bit with eating insects. You know, I don't want anybody to make me eat them, but,
I mean, this is fake meat. I mean, come on. This is getting fake crazy.
Meat, you know, and like, I mean, I don't know if we want to go off on this tangent, but like a lot of these debates are a product of shared assumptions that are not true. Like all the stuff about meat production, you know, harming the planet and so forth, that is only industrial meat production. But if you if you raise meat in a regenerative way, if you free range the animals, if you use intensive rotational grazing, you can actually use animals to improve the soil, increase biodiversity, and so forth. So it's if we accept the way that the authorities and the media frame debates, then we will end up never moving past the debate. Like the framing of the debate itself locks us into eternal conflict with each other.
Yeah, that's the narrative. And that's exactly where you go with this book, because I think the stories that you relay in this book, in the particular book, The Coronation, with these essays, literally will, as I'm getting to know you a little more with the conversation we're having here, and at least we're having a conversation about it, which is a good thing, because we couldn't have a discourse in normal society without somebody getting mad and upset about it. And I think that the stories are in the book are basically there to portray where did we go wrong in letting the narrative control us. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, you know, I'm really unearthing the origins of the narrative, you know, and trying to understand what it, like, if you take somebody like Bill Gates or Klaus Schwab or Anthony Fauci or any of these establishment types.
Names you know.
You know, like, one way to, like, you can look at them as these diabolical villains, but you miss a lot when you see them that way. You miss, like, what is their, what's the culture that surrounds them? What's the ideology that they inhabit that makes everything that they do seem right and natural and good? It's one thing to fight a tyrant who is willfully evil, but it's completely something else to fight somebody who fully believes in their own rightness and goodness. And I think that's true of the people I just mentioned. Like, they believe that they are saving the world. They are bringing science to one new realm after another, and because, you know, we, the benighted masses, don't know what's good for us, it's necessary for them to accumulate more and more power so that they can administer the solutions that we ourselves are too stupid to accept and that we would resist out of our own ignorance. Like, they are not that different from, you know, Hitler and Stalin and Mao, you know, who believed that they were saving the world. These people believe it too. So that's why we have to understand the ideology behind it. And part of that ideology is the ideology of I call it ascent, the arc of science and technology that is going to make us the lords and masters of the universe, that took us from primitive superstition to enlightened reason. Like, that whole narrative, if you accept that, then of course we're going to extend our engineering prowess to the genes, to the molecules, to your neurotransmitters. We're going to incorporate technology into your body. We're going to engineer the species just as we've engineered materiality. That is what progress is. So when you understand that someone like Bill Gates is fully invested in that conception of progress, then his actions are a lot more understandable. And you don't have to explain it away as, well, he's just evil, you know, he's a Satan worshiper or something like that. I mean, maybe he is, okay, but you don't need that explanation to understand why he's doing all the things that he's doing. And that means that we can address the condition that we are in on the level of our paradigms, our ideologies, our beliefs, our assumptions, and also the state of consciousness associated with those beliefs. because it's not just some intellectual construct. You know, there's a there's an experience of being that of control, of fear, that goes along with the beliefs that we've seen play out in the last couple of years of the pandemic of fear-based control of everyone and everything.
Well, the other thing that I've got to add to that is that now Deborah Birx, who was Trump's protocol, COVID protocol doctor out there at the time, has just come out with a book basically admitting that everything she said as far as 15 days to slow the spread, 15 days to stop the spread, you know, she's come out and admitted, you know, after I got that to happen, my next move was to figure out how to extend it because it was all about control. Then right. she's come out with a book that's basically a tell-all. And so, you know, when you look at the fact that more and more people are finding out about this book, it's like, okay, I've been lied to once, fool me once, you know, F me, fool me twice, F you. I mean, this is the way a lot of Americans are now behaving. And a lot of people, you know, have become depressed over the fact that I've been fooled. Oh, my God, how could I have been fooled? They really got one over on me. Oh, here I am finding myself cleaning my groceries, cleaning my shoes, cleaning out the car. I can't go to the grocery store. There are still people locked in their homes ordering food being delivered to their houses. I mean, it's no wonder that we're in the state of the union that we're in. Patrice in Ohio, you're on the phone with Charles Eisenstein. How are you?
I'm good. And you?
I'm doing fabulous. Thanks for asking. What's going on in your world?
Well, you're spot on because I don't believe for one second they believe in what they're doing because they lie. They've been caught in so many lies, it's beyond ridiculous. They wouldn't have to lie if they believed in what they said. They lie. They're liars. That's what they do. They're evil and they lie.
And they've been caught so many times. You know, how do we believe what they're saying? How can we trust them, you know, when they come out and say monkeypox is going to be the next?
Every day that goes by.
Yeah.
Every day that goes by, every second that goes by, it's less distrust. You even watch stupid mainstream media and they have out there how much we distrust the media themselves. They're calling themselves out and government. Yeah, shenanigans are over. They all lie.
How does that play into your book, Charles?
They definitely lie. There's no doubt about that, and they should not be trusted, and they should not be in positions of trust.
How can you believe in what you're doing if you're lying?
They justify their lies. You know, they think that we can't let the public know about these adverse events because then they won't.
They would justify their truth. They lie about their lies, and then they lie again about their lies.
That's true, too.
They justify their truth, which is a lie.
Yeah,
they know it's a lie.
I'm not disputing that they lie a lot.
Yeah, we know that.
All I'm saying is that they have
like
a story.
And they like lions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe you and I disagree.
They lie.
But... Okay. Thanks, Patrice. Yeah. I appreciate that. You know, she's come to this conclusion like so many of our listeners have here on this show, and I detect it because the air of frustration in a lot of the phone calls that we're getting, Charles, is the very things that you're probably talking about that you've exposed in these essays. People have their moment, and they either wake up or they're dumbed down or, you know, they take it in so many different ways. Life goes in so many different directions. It's what we make of it and how we address it. And that's why we have so many people out there. You've got 200 million of United States citizens that have bought into this garbage. They ran out and they got the jab. They've gotten boosted. Trump even went and ruined his credibility by telling the Republican-based political system that he got boosted. That wrecked his credibility, medical tyranny. We've looked at it and said, all these lies that you've done that Patrice just talked about, that ruined your credibility. You can't be trusted. The government can't be trusted. We don't like you anymore. We want you to dry up and blow away. I mean, we're sitting here literally on a political powder keg, and in November, we're watching what they're going to do.
People are angry as well they should be. you know, what the point that I was trying to make is that the people in power, at least some of them, at least many of them, believe in the rightness of what they're doing, or they at least have some justifications, rationalizations that they can use to, you know, sleep soundly at night. And that a lot of people in the power structure also are bought into these lies, even if they don't dare think about it too much. So, but yeah, people are enraged right now because for whatever reason, they've been lied to, they've been betrayed, they have lost their jobs, they have, I got one of the comments, I put some stuff on Substack, you know, asking for people's firsthand stories, you know, and like, I mean, one woman listed something like 20 different organizations that she had been kicked out of because she was unvaxxed. Like everything from her ukulele group to her knitting circle to two different churches that claimed to be tolerant, you know, and inclusive, but they wouldn't let her attend church, to like the library, you know, to the, I mean, 20 different or more organizations that excluded her. And, you know, and then, and not to mention the people who have suffered horrible health consequences or lost loved ones, and then who get gaslighted after the fact and, you know, told that they're just being hysterical. Like there is a wellspring of fury right now that is actually not even new. It's an intensification of a fury that has been building for a long time because the betrayal of our elites, the betrayal of our authorities that are supposed to, you know, have earned our respect. And this is supposed to be a democracy. They're supposed to be authorities because they represent the will of the people. They've completely betrayed us. And this goes back, you know, at least a generation or two.
Yeah. They look at Charles. I've been told, I was raised to believe we lived in a republic. Nancy Pelosi opens her mouth and says we have a democracy. I'm just like, look, you got this all wrong. We have a political system that is totally turned on its ear, and we the people have to rise up and do something about it. Charles Eisenstein, the author of the book The Coronation by Chelsea Green Publishing. I'm assuming you can get it where normally books are sold on Amazon and various other places, Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we thank you so much for being on the show. We're out of time for today. Folks, get the email blast, listen to the archives, share it with your friends. In the meantime, God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.